This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. I'm Phil Dave, and coming up on this program: this year's Queen's Birthday Honours list has been unveiled, and it's possibly one of the most Jewish in recent times, from philanthropist Professor David Khalili to Rabbi David Mayer of Pages, and Dame Maureen Lipman. Well, she'll be joining me to tell us how she feels after hearing the news. Mark Gardner from the CST will talk about the announcement from Facebook, which says the social media giant will now finally ban all Holocaust denial and Holocaust distortion. And for the last time, well, at least for now, we'll obtain the wise and humorous words of comedian Ashley Blaker. But before all of that, it's time to have a look at this week's copy of the Jewish News. And joining me to go through it is editor Richard Ferrer and news editor Justin Cohen. Welcome to you both.
Thanks, Phil.
Watch you, Phil.
My goodness me, I'm in the presence of journalistic royalty today. What with the two of you here, is we have the Gunsamachers of Jewish News, if ever I saw.
If you could just leave us alone and we'll talk amongst ourselves.
Okay, well, that's okay. I, to be honest, I'm sort of expecting that. Anyway, let's have a look.
Press record, and we'll speak later.
Let's have a look at the front page, shall we? Billions protected from Shoah denial.
Yes, it's finally happened. After all these years of Facebook saying, no, free speech, you know, deny it at your peril. Well, Mark Zuckerberg has had second thoughts, and this week has announced, as I'm sure everyone is now aware, that Holocaust revisionism, denial, distortion will be banned from the social media platform. We have Nicola Mendelssohn, who's one of the great and the good of our community and the vice president of the company, writing for us this week to say how personally she is moved by it and how clearly it's been something that she's been pushing for a number of years. So it's a big moment. Of course, you mess with freedom of speech at your peril. People, deniers, have every right to be outed as idiots. People are allowed to say stupid things like Trump's a competent president and the Holocaust never happened. And others should react accordingly. But what's happening here is there's a blurring, isn't there? There's a distinction between denial and revisionism, of false comparison, of blending history and blurring it with agenda and racism and anti-Jewish feeling. Clearly, there was only one decision they had to make. I just wish they'd made it years ago.
I guess, but one might say better late than never. And Justin, I can't use the exact words I want to use because obviously this is a sort of family-friendly podcast, but might I suggest about blooming time?
Yeah, I think Mark Zuckerberg in the past has suggested that in some way Holocaust revisionism may not be deliberate. It may be down to a lack of education, a lack of knowledge, and therefore shouldn't be treated in the same way as other forms of religious hate. And that's exactly what Holocaust denial is and should be classed as. But as Richard said, you know, this is something that should have happened many years ago. It's something that the CST and others have been pushing for the best part of a decade or longer. And the same with organizations internationally. It's good to hear Nicola in her piece this week talking about how the CST's contribution, the contribution of Danny Stone and the APT within Parliament has contributed towards this decision, which, you know, I think we all must welcome as late as it is.
And CST as well, who I know you've got Mark Gardner on later, so he can talk more about that. But Zuckerberg got it wrong. He thought it was down to ignorance. It's not down to ignorance. It's down to a very sinister agenda, as I was saying. And Deborah Lipstadt has written about the blurrers of history and how they try and undermine the great horror of the last century for their own political persuasions and their own political agendas. So, yeah, I'm sure in some cases it's ignorance, but ignorance can be forgiven. The agenda that he's tackling is something that needed to be addressed all along, and thankfully, finally, it has.
Certainly has. Now, talking of tackling a problem, an agenda, a hatred, page 10, what an extraordinary headline: former neo-Nazi on leaving hate behind.
Yeah, an extraordinary interview with Laura Manning. This is a lady, a 30-year-old Canadian, who grew up covered in swastikas and SS insignias and believed that Jews ruled the world. And basically her life was, I think, consumed by fear and ignorance. She appeared on a discussion panel this week with Nissa Nassim, which is the charity for Muslim and Jewish women, talking about how she's turned things around. She's a reformed neo-Nazi, and she has gone from espousing these anti-Jewish conspiracies to campaigning on behalf of Jewish and Muslim women. It's an extraordinary U-turn in her life. It reminded me a bit of, do you remember those twins? I think it was on Louis Theroux, Lamb and Lynx. They were on his catch-up program a few weeks ago saying that they've turned their back on anti-Semitism and Nazism, and they've grown up and come to resent their parents for what they did to them. So it's good to see that as people grow up and learn and decide that for themselves, that ignorance really is connected to fear. And fear, what was it that Yoda said? Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering. Yoda was right. And it's great to see this woman's turned her life around.
Might I say well done, because I've no idea if that quote was right or not, but I don't think I could repeat it. So well done. But
Star Wars fans will know I got that correct.
It goes to show that if people put their mind to it, they can change. You know, some people say, oh, no, you can't change the haters. Once a hater, always a hater. But not necessarily always the case, it would appear.
I imagine that path towards seeing the light must be particularly tricky if someone has been brought up in that way of thinking. In the same way as, you know, it's easier to learn a new language or new skills as a young person, the same must be the case with this type of thing. But you do often hear of people who turn their back on this type of thing when they meet people in real life, when they meet these people that they used to fear. Unfortunately, where there is a vacuum and where people don't meet the other, this type of lack of knowledge, ignorance and hate can breed.
Certainly can. But talking of changing attitudes and new beginnings and all of that, you have been speaking, Justin, this is on page 14, with the ambassador for the UAE. And I've been banging on about this for weeks, but I pinch myself. I can't quite believe I'm talking about this because, of course, this is the relations between UAE and Israel now, which, of course, have been normalised.
Yeah, I have to say that I've long wondered what it would be like if I ever had the opportunity to interview an ambassador from a country that didn't have diplomatic relations with Israel. And I, just on a personal level, a couple of years ago was thinking about where I could go on holiday in the winter and get a bit of sun. And the UAE was something that was suggested to me. And people said, oh, you'd probably be all right. You know, you've got Israeli stamps in your passport. You'll probably be okay to get in. You'll probably be fine once you're there, but you have to be slightly careful. So in the end, I didn't go. And I think that the fact that I was a guest at the UAE embassy last week to speak about this new normalized relations, to talk about the potential for trade relations, to talk about the ambassador's wish that British Jews visit the UAE and Dubai in large numbers, but also particularly significantly, maybe more so, was the fact that he was very conscious about the hate, the anti-Semitism suffered by British Jews in recent years. He'd seen all that coverage and he volunteered, without me asking about the issue, you know, he volunteered this knowledge and he volunteered to say that he was keen for his country, for him himself, to become allies in the fight against anti-Semitism going forward. And he was also on the same note, very critical, very openly so, of hatred in parts of the Arab media. So I think quite a significant interview and some very strong lines there.
Extraordinary stuff. Well, you can read that full interview on page 14. But I'm afraid that's all we've got time for a look at the paper for this week. Thank you both very much indeed. Don't forget that if you are isolating, you can always get the full copy of the paper as it would be printed on the website. That's jewishnews.co.uk. Or you can always collect your copy every Thursday. Editor Richard Ferrer, news editor Justin Cohen, thank you both very much indeed.
Thank you, Phil.
Thank you, Phil.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, this year's birthdays honours list was delayed from June because of the coronavirus, but it's arguably one of the more Jewish lists that we've seen in recent times, with recognitions for Holocaust educators and survivors, and even a damehood for our next guest. I'm delighted to say that joining me on the Jewish News Podcast is Dame Maureen Lipman, Now, Dame, am I allowed to call you Maureen, or do I have to call you Dame Maureen from now on? I don't mind either.
I think your royal elegance would do me, actually.
I am not worthy. I'm not worthy.
I'm talking to a commoner at all.
Well, quite. In that case, your elegance, thank you very much indeed, first and foremost, for speaking to us on the Jewish News Podcast. And may I start off with saying Mazel Tov about blooming time.
I'm so glad you said Mazel Tov and not Mazal Tov, which apparently people is the correct way to say it. I don't like the way they keep changing bagels and Mazal Tovs and things.
No, it's very simple. I would never in a million years say bagel either. And I was speaking actually to the good people at what I would call Bagel Bake in Brick Lane a couple of weeks ago on this programme. And I got very badly told off. It's Bagel Bake. No, it's not.
Bagel Bake. Oh, well, they're just cockneys, aren't they, in any other form? By any other name, a bagel is a bagel. Let's call the whole thing off.
Well, quite. Now, the birthday honours, as I mentioned just then, they were delayed from June. But when did you first find out that you were getting this damehoodship?
I can't remember the actual time, but it was about 10 weeks ago, and I've sat on it for 10 weeks, which is really like sitting on a hemorrhoid, frankly. I have found that quite tricky. There was a letter I sent to my children with Mrs. scratched out and Dame put in, and Adam got his and Amy didn't get hers, which caused a bit of sibling rivalry, but it also caused me to be petrified that it had fallen into the hands of some ferrety little journo from the Daily Gets Much Worse, and I would get it taken away from me. I kept the secret after that until one night in Manchester, where I was sitting with my yoga teacher and his husband having a wagamama, as you do, in a greenhouse outside on Media City. Life is so weird. Suddenly they said something about, why don't you have... And I went, well, as a matter of fact, but if you tell anyone, I will break your wrist.
Might I ask, even though I know, I'm fairly confident anyway, I say I know, I'm quietly confident that you would never have sort of done anything in your career to necessarily be angling for this kind of accolade, but I assume it's very nice to have now you've got it.
Angling, Phil? Me? Angling? Yes, I go to every charity thinking, great, there's a damehood in this for me, mate. Oh, God. No, I mean, I thought when I got my honour last time, I thought, well, that is pretty damn good for a girl from Hull. And I never, ever in a million years expected anything else. But it's funny that this, I don't know whether it's Celebrity Gogglebox that swung it or possibly even the anti-Corbyn stand. That might have helped me. I mean, there might have been an absolute flurry of letters into the honours office from Jewish people who were very happy that Corbyn had gone away. You never know. You never know. I have tried in the past to get honours for other people who I thought deserved it. I've sent lots of letters, but it never worked. So, you know, it's probably something to do with what the courtiers watch on telly. I don't know.
And just to explain to riffraff like me, is it a case of you don't know who's put you forward for this, but you have to be nominated? Is that right?
Yes. I don't know the answer to that, but I know that my own nominations for others went unheeded. So I don't know, but I suspect that people write in and say, you know, what about giving old Mo one before she gets finally cut off by the great telephone exchange in the sky? Whatever it is, Phil, I'm a very happy dame. And if one more person sends me, there is nothing like on my email, I will still go on being very happy to be one.
Yes, I can imagine that most people think that they're probably the first person to have thought of sending that. Is that right?
It's like the ology situation. Yeah, they go, they're like, hey, you still got an ology? I say, nobody's ever said that to me before. How witty.
Do you feel any different for having received this accolade? Or is it just a case of, or actually more specifically, have people treated you any different since receiving this?
I don't normally get four boxes of flowers in a day, and I certainly don't get 25 fish balls sent through the post from Pag Wagman. That was very handy when I came back from Manchester on Friday night. So, yeah, people, I must say, in all seriousness, that the response to my getting this has been really amazing. So many people are pleased and delighted and pleased for me and say about time and you deserve it. I'm quite shocked because I thought really that I wasn't in that league. So, you know, I'm trying not to be cynical, and I'm not cynical about this because what I said, the first thing that came to me was, my God, this is one generation after Hyman Lippmann arrived on these shores in Hull, thinking he was in New York, what, second prize, and my dad was in trade, and I'm a dame. So it just, I wrote that down, and I said, you know, that it made me feel pretty small in case I got big-headed, but it was a great argument for why immigrants are a good thing and mostly give back entirely of what they have taken. And I sent the letter with that statement on it to Alison at Coronation Street. It was in the PR office. I said, in case anyone asks. Then I sent it to my children and I said, does this sound pompous? And to a man, they put back, yes, very. So well, Adam kind of rewrote it slightly for me.
So it doesn't matter now. You're a dame. You can be pompous, can't you?
Well, I'd hope not to be quite as pompous as they seem to think I am. But, you know, I don't know because I haven't had long enough to grow into it. What I hope sincerely and without pomposity is that I can use it to do some good because I'm, you know, I'm great at ideas and I'm good at showing up on the day, but I'm not really at all good at administration of any kind, at making things work, at being there at you know, on the end. I'm quite good on the end of a phone, or you know, I'm good to my friends who I think need help. But, you know, you the real heroes, of course, are the people who volunteer and the people who are on the front line throughout all this phony war that we're going through. And it is a phony war. And what is the point of our elected members spending 3 hours in Parliament chucking snowdrifts at one another when they need to decide between themselves? This is a war. The enemy is invisible, but it is a war, a cyber war, and we need to solve it with a party, a war cabinet. Keir, send me your best man or woman. I'll send you someone who isn't Michael Gove, and and the Liberals can send anyone they've still got. And that's what they do. That's what they do all day. They get track and test right, and they put the mandatory masks on everyone. And then, oh, what's his name with the shredded wheat on his head? He can just busy himself with Brexit. That's what he came in to do, and possibly cancel HS2 and give the money to all the causes that they need, because we're going to be in terrible debt. That's before I get started on Trump.
Well, might I suggest that you run for office, because you got my vote. Anyway, all of that politics to one side, because this is a happy occasion. I don't want to shatter it with politics. Do you know, in all seriousness, anything about the ceremony yet? Because obviously, sort of when one gets a knighthood, a damehood, anything like that, of course, there's some sort of nice ceremony around it. But of course, I can imagine that's probably pretty disrupted at the moment.
I don't think it'll happen, Phil. I really don't. Unless I get Her Majesty down my basement steps. It's not going to happen. I suspect it'll be Prince Charles, and I suspect it'll be a Zoom. And I'm hoping to be in the Rover's Return with that ridiculous hairstyle and half a pint of brandy. We'll see.
Well, now that you've mentioned the Rovers, actually, what do you think that Evelyn would make of the damehood now?
She'd say, damn stupid. She'd say, what empire? Get someone. He nerves, honestly. And I'm still not taking my vest off.
Well, I think it's fabulous, and I couldn't be happier. And honestly, I know that you say about how it's those who volunteer are the ones who deserve and things like that, but the way I look at it is it's people like your good self who inspire others to do great things means that I believe it is wholeheartedly deserved. So mazel tov again, and thank you very much indeed for telling us about it on the Jewish News Podcast, Dame Maureen Lippmann.
Yeah, thank you very much. Cheers. God bless.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Now, Facebook boss Mark Zuckerberg, as you've been hearing, has announced that the social media giant is to finally ban Holocaust denial and Holocaust distortion. It's in a major move that will ultimately cheer activists fighting online anti-Semitism and arguably None who do that better than the Community Security Trust, the CST, and I am so delighted to say that taking a moment out of an extremely busy schedule is the CEO of the CST, Mark Gardner, here on the Jewish News Podcast. Thank you, Mark. I know that you are a very busy sort of chap, so I always appreciate you talking to us.
But my pleasure.
Can we first of all start off with a little explanation of why online hatred causes such problems and distress for CST and the community, I suppose, in general?
It used to be when I started out at CST, we would get phone calls because somebody had received hate mail through the post, or maybe they'd received a hateful phone call, or maybe someone had shouted abuse at them in the street. The bit where people shout abuse at you in the street, that still happens, and generally that's the most common sort of anti-Semitism. But sometimes, including during the lockdown period, it's stuff that occurs on social media and it's more impactful. But then there's another very important part, and this is where the Holocaust denial comes in. Again, when I started out at CST, if you wanted to get your hands on Holocaust denial material, how do you think you did it in a pre-internet age? It wasn't the sort of thing that you could buy in your local newsagent. Actually, you had to already know how to be in touch with either Nazis or Islamists who were circulating the Holocaust denial. And then you would send off a postal order. And then it would come and it would arrive in a brown paper envelope, right? And the whole thing was basically really dodgy and all a bit pathetic. And it was down in the gutter where it belonged. Nowadays, anybody of any age can access any of it online at the click of a button.
And bearing in mind, of course, that social media now is accessible to people at a very vulnerable and very impressionable age, one would assume that there is even more danger there because that's the age where they could start absorbing this information and taking it as gospel.
Exactly correct. It's really, really important that a company of the size of Facebook, which essentially epitomizes social media in our modern age, says, actually, we're not having this on our platform anymore. Actually, if you want to find Holocaust denial, then you're going to have to go somewhere else. And the more mainstream media spaces that we can drive it out of, the harder it will be for people to find it.
And the example that I'd give, by the way, on this front, when anyone sort of says, oh, it's not possible really to do that, is if you look at something like YouTube, and YouTube used to have videos by the far-right activist chap by the name of Jack Renshaw, who is now serving time for another crime we don't need to go into. The point is, though, he used to come up with the most vile, revolting things. And he was all over YouTube at one stage. I now sort of happen to know that YouTube have successfully removed any material associated with him. So it is always possible. So don't buy in too much to anyone saying, oh, well, it's just not possible to get a grip on it. It is. And this has hopefully proven it. Can you give us some examples, though, of what some people should be looking out for in terms of posts? Because I think there's a difference between looking at images of the Holocaust, which is highlighting the plight of our ancestors, versus the kind of content that categorically denies it or twists it.
Sure. I don't know where Facebook will draw the dividing lines between somebody who is just ignorant or somebody who's malicious. I don't know how they're going to make that calculation. So, you know, you read these unbelievable statistics, or maybe they are very believable, actually, about how many American kids have never heard of the Holocaust. Okay, that's an innocent mistake. And I think we should have the seichel and the awareness to realize that. But really, when you see it, you know it. When you see something where somebody is behaving in a deliberately malicious way, most of us see it. And I think 99% of the stuff, it will be perfectly obvious what it is that we're talking about. Now, I know what we're talking about because in my job at CST, we look out for this material. It could be, for example, the kind of stuff that the Nazis used to say quite a lot in the 1990s. The Holocaust couldn't possibly happen because when you do scientific analysis on the remaining bricks at what they say the crematoria were at Auschwitz, actually the chemical residue isn't right, and therefore it proves that there was no Zyklon B. And so this kind of scientific stuff. pseudo-scientific lies is the shape that a lot of it takes. Then you get where David Irving used to be before he adopted that kind of scientific stuff. Hitler didn't know about it. This wasn't a systematic program of mass murder. Well, okay, I admit there were shootings, and the shootings were terrible. And the shootings occurred in Eastern Europe. The gas chambers, I'm not too sure what the evidence is. All right, I'll give you some of the shootings, but not the gas chambers. And you get into these things that are obscene even to say and to think of, or I find it obscene to have to say it, but this is the kind of material that is out there. It's all a lie because the Jews run the media, and the Jews wanted an excuse to make their state in Israel, and they wanted everyone to feel sorry for them, and they wanted people to never, ever take pride in being German or being British or being American or whatever. And this is just a gigantic hoax that proves that the Jews run the world. It comes in different ways, some of which might look more believable than others, but all of which is disgusting and does not belong on Facebook or anywhere else that claims to be a legitimate mainstream space.
And of course, the most important thing is that if you are in any doubt of the legitimacy of a post that you are reading and that you are not sure whether or not it constitutes as hate or not, and there will be some out there that aren't sure, report it anyway, because actually Facebook and other social media giants do have the kind of filters and algorithms in place to monitor this sort of thing and to make sure that it is okay. How do you react, Mark, as head of CST, to this news that Facebook has taken this action? What does it mean to you?
It hits me personally before it hits me as chief exec of CST, because personally, I've been involved in arguing with Facebook for years on this. Forgive me, I don't remember how long Facebook has been in existence for, but it certainly feels that I have been arguing with them for a very, very long time. I've represented CST and British Jews and European Jews at various meetings with Facebook representatives on this issue. I've been on the phone to California about this issue. I've had plenty of meetings and conference calls here in the UK with Facebook UK on this issue. I know how far Facebook has come. I know that it's an absolute paradigm shift in what they say about this issue. As soon as they began to take responsibility for what was on their website, this was a place that we had to get to. As soon as they admitted that they bore responsibility for what was on Facebook, we had to get Holocaust denial included in those responsibilities. Otherwise, everything that they said about anti-Semitism, everything that they said about what was true, what wasn't true on Facebook, counted for absolutely nothing. This was absolutely totemic, symbolic, really, really important. And so I just felt a huge sense of relief. I know that some people will say, we ought to say thank you. I can't bring myself to say thank you to someone who agrees not to broadcast Holocaust denial, because it's just such a basic, basic thing. But also, I'm not going to criticize them too much for how long it's taken, because I know that they have all the power and none of the legal responsibility to actually do this. They just don't. They don't need to do this, and they have done it. So in that sense, I guess I am a little bit grateful. But if they were to have any morality in my eyes, the moment they started saying this is true, that's not true, they had to act. So just what I mean by that, if you go on Facebook and you say that coronavirus isn't real, then you're not allowed to do that. So the moment they do stuff like that, they have to ban Holocaust denial. They have to. They've got no option. And I think that's what's brought this about, to be honest with you.
Well, thank goodness they have done just that. Just finally, if anyone is maybe feeling a bit threatened, a bit unsure, doesn't know what to do, I'm hoping they can turn to CST for advice. And if they do want to do so, where do they go for that?
If anybody wants to report something to CST because you think it might be anti-Semitic or because you really know that it is, then I just encourage you, please, please do so. Come to our website, csd.org.uk, or phone the 24-hour number. If it's an emergency, then you've got to call 999, all right? But if it's not an absolute emergency, then do call us. I'll give you our national emergency number, which is 0800-032-3263. That's 0800-032-3263. And that is manned 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, all year round.
Mark Gardner, CEO of the CST, thank you so much for talking to us on this episode of the Jewish News Podcast.
Cheers. Always a pleasure. Thank you.
This is the Jewish News Podcast in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group, supporting Jewish communities worldwide. Time now for a wise and humorous look at the world as we've come to know it, and for what will be the final time, at least for now, courtesy of comedian Ashley Blaker.
Hello, friends. Ashley Blaker here, back on the Jewish News Podcast. And it's the end of the holidays. No more shul. I was going to say no more shul, but for most people, there hasn't been shul. So no more thinking that you should be in shul, but you can't be for another year. Basically, coronavirus has made a lot of people go from twice a year Jews to twice every other year Jews. That's fine. And of course, this week, the Prime Minister has actually introduced a new three-tier system, which I think can best be explained in terms of different Jewish denominations. There's level one, reform. You can pretty much do whatever you like. Then there's level two, orthodox. Lots of things are no longer permitted. And then level three is ultra-orthodox. Basically, no fun is allowed anymore whatsoever. Of course, in many Orthodox synagogues, it's actually the other way round. It's pretty much do whatever you like, but let's not say that out loud in case the authorities hear. In fact, I thought it was quite appropriate that a few days after Simchas Torah, that Sir Keir Starmer was suggesting a circuit break for 2 weeks, because it was those Simchat Torah circuits, the Hakofas, which will probably have done a lot to spread coronavirus in the Orthodox world. Again, let's not talk about that. And it was a very nice Yom Tov here, nice Sukkot. None of the Ushpizin, of course, visiting our Sukkah this year. Nothing to do with coronavirus. They just probably don't want to spend time with my children. And Simchas Torah didn't end up going to my synagogue. I was a little bit worried, decided to stay at home. The only downside was I had to give myself both Chasam Torah and Chasam Bereshis, and now I've had to give myself such a big donation, I'm completely broke. But at the very least, there wasn't all the usual drunkenness in my neighbourhood, so I gave a little bit of a break to Hatzalah. If you don't know, by the way, what Hatzalah is, it's basically the Jewish Ambulance Service. They have them all over the world, and it's actually a remarkable organisation. We should actually give a little plug to Hatzalah. Firstly, the responders all have different jobs. This is just a voluntary sideline. And number two, they're incredibly quick. Call Hatzalah and these guys will be around your house in a few minutes, even quicker than if you call 999. And in fact, I remember when they launched it in Adria, I was thinking about this, and I realised that one of the responders was a plumber. In fact, this is a guy we call when our toilet's blocked, and typical plumber, he never answers the phone. And then you get hold of him, he doesn't turn up when he says he will. Then you finally get him round, he charges you a fortune. So I thought, you know what I'll do, right? Next time we have a problem, I'll find out when he's on duty, feign a heart attack and call Hatzalah. It was great. I had this plumber round our house in under 2 minutes. I was lying on the floor going, yeah, I've got terrible chest pain every time I flush the toilet. Also, they work in pairs. If you're lucky, he might bring the IT guy. Yeah, I've also got agony in my side when I try to reboot my laptop. Just have a look at it for me. But anyway, it's been a strange week, because after last week's podcast where I talked about the reaction I'd had to a joke about Donald Trump on Facebook, I did get several messages from listeners. People are listening to this. Who knew? And people have said to me, hang on. Before you make jokes about Donald Trump, remember he is good for Israel. Now, as I said last week, I don't want to get into the ins and outs of Donald Trump and whether it's sufficient just to be keen on Israel. But I would say that just because someone likes Israel is not always a good thing. You know, I can guarantee every time I go out shopping, at least one person will come up to me in Sainsbury's and say, Shalom. For a laugh, I sometimes reply, alaikum assalam, which not often confuses them. But they usually turn out to be these very well-meaning, but incredibly overbearing non-Jewish Zionists. And they see me in the supermarket and start calling out from 5 hours away, shalom, my brother, shalom. I have to be honest, I always pretend not to hear them and just start walking in the opposite direction. But they aren't put off that easily. Shalom, my brother, shalom. Eventually, I run out of aisles and he's pinned me up against the freezer cabinet. Shalom, my brother. Now, I just want to tell you, I have studied the Old Testament. And it says there that the land of Israel was given to Abraham by Elohim, and you're not to give up one inch of that land. You hear me, my brother? You don't give up one inch. And I always say to them, I'm incredibly flattered that you think I'm that influential, but it's really not down to me. Netanyahu has never rung me up and said, yeah, actually, we're thinking about giving up more settlements to the Palestinians. Just wanted to get your opinion first. Oh, Bibi, oh, I'm glad you called. Because normally I'd say, of course, you know, anything to help the peace process. But I was in Sainsbury's this morning. Yeah, the one in the Broadwalk, Ashway, yeah, that's right. And an evangelical Christian convinced me that we mustn't do it. So just before you get all excited about what a good friend of Israel Donald Trump is, just be careful, because he may be accosting you in Tesco's and pinning you up against the freezer cabinet and not letting you get on with your day after he loses the election in November. Who knows? But anyway, as the last British general election showed, the important thing is not actually being in government at the end. The key thing is winning the argument, which I'm sure we all agree Jeremy Corbyn did. He didn't win the election, but he won the argument. So we'll give him that. Anyway, the sad news is this is my last appearance for a while on the Jewish News podcast, because I've got a new 4-part series for the BBC to write, 6.5 Children, and I've barely written a word of it. And if I don't get on with it soon, I'm going to have Tim Davey, the new Director General, round at my house demanding I get up in the middle of the night and start writing this. I don't want that to happen. So I will be back probably at some point early in 2021 when I've actually written this show. Until then, keep well, stay safe, and I will see you soon. Bye.
The wise and humorous words of comedian Ashley Blaker there. And thank you very much indeed to Ashley, who has joined us for the last, can you believe, 21 podcasts. So thank you very much indeed to him. And we hope he'll join us again very soon here on the Jewish News Podcast. And that's it for this episode. Of course, the Jewish News Podcast is in association with Genesis Philanthropy Group. Through its partners, GPG is working to support the growth of Jewish community life in the UK and worldwide. To find out more, you can always visit gpg.org. All that's left for me to do is to say thank you to our guests, to Dame Maureen Lipman, Mark Gardner, Ashley Blaker, and of course our paper team, Richard Ferrer and Justin Cohen. And of course we must say thank you to Justin, who's produced this episode, and thank you goes as well to Adam Bradley for his work in post-production. Please do subscribe to the show in your podcast application, and that way you'll hear any previous episodes or be informed when new episodes become available. Don't forget that for more information on any of the stories that we've featured, you can always go to jewishnews.co.uk. If you'd like to comment, by the way, then we would absolutely love to hear from you. You can always email editorial@thejngroup.com. That's editorial@thejngroup.com. From me, Phil Dave, do join us next time here on the Jewish News Podcast. Goodbye.